Well, 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 we're back. You know that smell you can't define when you come home after your little walk in the park and it turns out to be dog shit at the bottom of your boot? Well, we're back. Now, we've got a fascinating 5 weeks. Well, every week is fascinating when you're my age, because I'll find out soon enough whether God exists. I'm sure that she doesn't. But getting back to that, tonight we're having our gathering for our listeners, whether it's Anarchist World This Week, Radical Australia, Talk Back With Attitude, and Members of Public Interest Before Corporate Interests, or anybody else, down at La Porchetta Restaurant on the Nepean Highway in Frankston, 6:30 p.m. start. You pay for your own food and drinks. That's tonight, the 25th of March. On the 1st of April, yes, April Fool's Day, we'll be continuing our Ringwood extravaganza for listeners in the eastern part of Melbourne and beyond at Taj Agra, the Indian restaurant across the road from the Ringwood railway station. Just walk down about 50 to 100 metres and there it is across the road. Don't walk up the street, walk down the street. So that starts at 6:30 p.m. The first one we had last month went very well. So great food. I don't know about the company, but the food's good. So come along and join us if you're a listener to a 3CR, a member of public interest before corporate interest, or somebody who's interested in a different type of political analysis. Then the following week, which will be the 8th of April, how time flies. On the 8th of April, we will be having dinner at the Latin American restaurant at the corner of Breeze Street and Albion Street in Brunswick for our listeners in the CBD and possibly the West. And the following Wednesday on the 15th, I'll be doing a presentation at the Footscray Hotel, 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start on the myths surrounding Australia's involvement in World War One. The Anzac myth dissected. And what's that? And then just goes on and on. Now, don't forget May Day, which is not far away. On May Day, on the 1st of May, I'll be doing the traditional anarchist May Day walk starting at Chummy Place in Carlton at 11 a.m. We will be looking at about 10 significant anarchist sites in the city and the history of the city of Melbourne. And obviously, as always, that'll be followed by lunch at the Paramount Food Court. And don't forget, if you're just in the public housing struggle, we continue to have our weekly vigil on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House every Thursday, midday to 1 p.m. That's midday to 1 p.m. Followed by, you guessed it, lunch at the Paramount Food Court every Thursday. Public housing, everybody's business. So that's a few things that are lined up in the next 5 to 6 weeks. And the big one, 3CR celebrates its 50th birthday on the 4th of July this year. That's Saturday, the 4th of July. There will be a huge gathering, possibly three of us will turn up, at the Collingwood Town Hall, which is in Abbotsford, believe it or not, starting 11 a.m., 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. So hopefully we see many of our listeners there. Here we go.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
Week broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. As I said, the program is podcast. It's coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. That's 3CR in Melbourne. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, it comes from the word anarchos, without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to destroy whatever they like, whenever they like? Inequalities in power and wealth. And the first quarter of the 21st century has been a celebration time for the powerful and the wealthy, as they get more powerful and more wealthy. So the anarchist struggles, the struggle to devolve, share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Ideas that human beings have been struggling since time immemorial, since they left the Velts in Africa, almost 150,000 years ago. Well, did you enjoy the South Australian election? Divided nation rises phoenix-like from the political ashes. Nice to see. Look, got to congratulate them, don't you? From, I think, 1.8% of the vote at the last state election, they went up to about 21.5% of the vote, and they may even secured a few lower house seats in the parliament. Now, you would think that this was the news, not that the Labor Party had been re-elected with a resounding majority, but that's a different story. Now, I've been talking about divided nation for some time on the Anarchist World This Week, and I talk about it because I don't consider it to be some peripheral Australian concern. The ideas which are incorporated into the divided nation mantra are ideas which have existed since Federation. Let's not forget, the first piece of legislation which was passed through the Federal Parliament in 1901 was the White Australia Policy. Let's not forget that the Australian Trade Union movement was built around the ideas of European labour. And I'm old enough to remember buying this second-hand set of table and a seat, and it had little labels underneath. I should have kept them. Be worth a mint today. And the little label said, made by European labour in Australia. So the sentiments which have been echoed by divided nation are not new. Now, these sentiments, to a significant degree, are part and parcel of the fact that over the last 50 years, as a people, we have supported the globalisation, corporatisation, deregulation and privatisation agenda, believing that leaving not just the economy but the culture and social interaction to the private sector would deliver us nirvana and personal freedom. Now, obviously, during this period, what we have seen is a huge change in terms of the wealth which is created and distributed and shared in this country. For example, in the 70s, if you invested a dollar in a business or the stock market or in a business and you made a profit of $3 from that investment, $2 would go to the workers who made that profit and $1 would go to you, the investor. In 2026, after the deregulation, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation revolution that has swept the world, the figure has been turned on its head in less than 50 years. If you make $3 profit, $2 goes to you and $1 goes to the workers who made that profit. So what has happened? has we have embraced globalisation and corporatisation as the way forward, and privatisation and deregulation as the way forward, what has happened is that more and more and more Australians and people around the world, as we saw in the United States of America, find themselves on the outer. It's interesting that the same people who support divided nation are the very same people who don't seem to understand that their position in many ways mirrors the positions of First Nations people in this country. So there is a economic, social and political and cultural component to the rise of divided nation. Because the fact is that when you look at the policies of divided nation and who supports divided nation, it's not who you think it is. Although a lot of its support comes from dissatisfied, marginalised, ostracised people who feel that they are strangers in their own country, who feel that somehow they've lost what little power they were able to exercise in the past. The fact is that divided nation is a policy free zone in terms of national security, in terms of economic strategy, in terms of division of wealth. Because the fact is that some of the most powerful oligarchs in this country are pumping a great deal of money into divided nation because they understand that ultimately, while we argue and fight amongst ourselves about gender, sexual orientation, immigration, race, religion, all the peripheral elements of everyday existence, that we won't turn our attention to the reason people are ostracised and marginalised. The fact is that this country's parliamentary system, so-called representative democracy, has been captured by that 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. And we see the major political parties, whether it's Labor, Liberal, you know, or National, or even Divided Nation, to a lesser degree the Greens, are basically held hostage by that 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. That's why we now find ourselves in a situation where private charities need to raise money from the Australian population to send Australian children to public schools. That's why we have extraordinary waiting lists in the public health sector. That's why we have an early childhood development sector which has been monopolised by a handful of corporations, and we see what happens when you give the corporate sector free rein and give them the key to the Australian Treasury. That's why the aged care sector finds itself in such a mess. And that's why one in three Australians are now living on Social Security benefits, which are almost below the poverty line. And that's why one in four Australians, around 23-24% of Australians, who are working are on the minimum wage, which is about $50,000 a year. And they pay tax on that $50,000 a year, as well as the goods and services tax, which occurs on most things except healthcare and fresh food. So here we have a situation where we have a miserable, I'm not saying we're miserable, but in terms of numbers, 27 million people out of 8 billion, 8.3 billion, living on a resource-rich continent, finding that an increasing section of the population is now ostracised, marginalised, and so ostracised and marginalised that they're attracted to political parties and political movements like Divided Nation, which claim that the issue that faces us is Muslim immigration, transsexual revolution, gender politics, and the list goes on and on. So, we are faced with a critical situation. And that critical situation is, how do you and we as a people counter Divided Nation? Do we counter it by attacking its leadership? Do we counter it by looking down on those Australians, one in five, who currently support a Divided Nation? Do we counter it by exposing where its financial backing comes from, some of the richest people in this country? Do we counter it because of its lack of policies? Or more importantly, do we counter it, although it calls itself one nation, that all it will do is divide the nation, break down social cohesion, and more importantly, increase the power of that 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication to set the parliamentary agenda? Nothing highlights this more than what is happening currently. And we'll speak about the Middle East in a minute. What is happening currently? Gas companies in this country, we're the second greatest producer of gas in the world after Qatar. Qatar's got its problems, so we're now the first, you know, the most gas producer in the world. And these gas corporations are making huge profits as a result of the war, and none of these profits actually go back to the Australian people. And we've got this tepid debate about a super profits tax on the gas industry. A tepid debate, which is not supported by Divided Nation, not supported by the Liberal Party, not supported by the National Party, and has lukewarm, very lukewarm support amongst the Labor Party. The only people who are pursuing this are the Greens, the Australian Greens, and a number of independents in the federal parliament. So the fact is that unless the rise of the Divided Nation is a direct consequence of our failure, that's right, my failure, your failure as activists. For far too long, we have been mesmerised by identity politics. For far too long, we've been fighting it amongst each other about things that are really non-consequential. For far too long, we've allowed the 1% that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication to set the parliamentary agenda. For far too long, we have believed the rhetoric that the private sector is much better than the public sector. And we found this to our chagrin in 2015 when we set up public interest before corporate interest, which continues to exist. We found that most people had no idea what the public sector was. The propaganda had been so encompassing that everybody believed that if it's public, it's bad. If it's private, it's good. And why do they believe that? Because there's never enough staff or funds in the public sector to deliver the services that need to be delivered. And why isn't there ever enough funds? And the fact is very simple, because so much of Australia's taxation revenue comes from pay-as-you-earn taxpayers, that 25% of the population on the minimum wage. While we have laws which allow the richest people in this country to continue to amass fortunes beyond our comprehension, because they dominate the debate regarding at a parliamentary agenda, what laws will be passed. Now, you may think, you know, you may think it's all about social media or asocial media, whatever you like to call it. The fact is that the political agenda in this country every day is set by the Australian, Murdoch's mouthpiece in Australia. Because if you read the garbage that comes out of the Australian, and then you look at all the responses in asocial media, radio, television, private and public, it's a response to that material. So though, although it's part of the legacy media and it doesn't make a financial profit, it never has since it was created in the 1960s, the fact is that it continues to set the political, social and cultural agenda in this country, where we believe that everything private is good, that private investment for private profit, even in the most essential industries, whether it's electricity, whether it's gas, whether it's aged care, whether it's early childhood development, whether it's schooling, is better in the private sector. We've believed that propaganda for far too long, and we have failed because we haven't been able to provide an alternative. Our alternatives have revolved around identity politics, council culture. It hasn't revolved around exposing and organising around the growing inequalities in this country. Growing inequalities in this country. It's unbelievable. So, if you think you can do nothing about it, well, you'll do nothing about it. But we can. We can do something about it. We can change the direction of the debate and possibly the cultural response to that debate. There are elements amongst the people who support Divided Nation who are beginning to understand that it's not Muslim integration that's the problem. Beginning to understand is that growing inequality is due to the fact that we have laws in this country which ensure the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And if you think I'm making this up, have a look around you. How many people did you walk over this today or around today on your way to work? How many people do you walk around on your way to church or the mosque or the temple if you're religiously inclined every day in this country? How many stories do you hear personally on social media and the legacy media regarding people who are not looked after? Older Australians, younger Australians, the list goes on and on. And the central crux of the matter is, where's the money coming from? And most of the money comes pay as you earn. Taxpayers over 70%, not from corporate tax, which is about 20%, and the rest comes from customs and excise, but pay-as-you-earn taxpayers. So if corporate Australia is making billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars every year, where's that taxation revenue? Where is the will amongst the current political parties to actually raise that issue? All those people who support Divided Nation in the regions need to understand, and I live in a region in Australia, need to understand that the drought that I've experienced in the last 18 months is unusual for the part of the world I live in. And the floods and the droughts and the cyclones, they're unusual. The climate change is real. Doesn't matter how much propaganda there is that it's not real. Doesn't matter if the buffoon in Washington stands up and says it's a hoax. But the fact is, we are a divided nation. There is no social cohesion. When there is growing inequality in a community, people look for scapegoats. It's easy to identify scapegoats who look different, who act different, who wear funny clothes, as far as you know, you may be concerned. But the fact is, attacking scapegoats is not going to change your situation if you're marginalised or ostracised, or you're one of the one in four Australians in the workforce who relies on a minimum wage, or the 30% who rely on social security benefits? The fact is, we have major corporations in this country that are making hundreds of billions of dollars because they are exploiting this country's natural resources. Whether it's First Nations people or the rest of us, they are making hay while the country continues to become degraded because of the fact that they have a monopoly on the exploitation of this country's wealth. Wouldn't it be nice to see one political group, apart from public interest before corporate interest and some, you know, socialist groups, talk about nationalising this country's natural resources, nationalising without compensation? And if that's unconstitutional, well, getting them to pay 90% tax? I mean, pay-as-you-earn taxpayers, once you get above a certain threshold, are still paying over 42% tax. But not these corporations. And nothing will change unless we are able to convince other Australians that this is the way forward. Not by fighting amongst ourselves about what are essentially nationally peripheral issues. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Well, I was thinking, I want to become rich, all right? Rich, okay? We all want to become rich. And I was thinking, what am I going to invest in? Gold? Maybe I've missed the boat there. I'm old enough to remember when gold was $200 an ounce. It's now, what, over $5,000 an ounce US. So I've missed the boat there, and obviously I didn't have any money to invest in gold. How about stocks and shares? Yes. Well, I could, as most Australians have, through their superannuation funds, and they've seen their values of their shares drop by 10% in the last 6 weeks because of the buffoon in Washington. How about property? All those wonderful things for private investors to invest in the residential property market. You know, property. You know, people have been pushed into the property market. Get yourself a second property. Claim, you know, negative gearing, tax deduction. Claim your capital gains, you know. The list goes on and on. There's only one problem. To buy gold, shares and property, you need money, or you need to borrow it and pay inordinate interest to some financial entity. But I have worked out the 21st currency for Australia, and I'd like to thank Divided Nation for helping me find the solution to the financial situation I find myself in. Hate and loathing. That's it. Invest in hate and loathing. Fear, hate and loathing. Great investments. You don't need any money. You can feel really, really good about yourself because you've worked out who the enemy is. Who's put you in that situation where you can't invest in gold and shares and property? It's all their fault because they wear a funny hat. It's all their fault because they speak a different religion. And the list goes on and on. So, how do we get ahead? Form your own hate and loathing political party or cultural entity. That's the way to get ahead in Australia in the 21st century. Become a real Australian, a real citizen. Well, let's move on. Now, if you want to join public interest before corporate interest, it's simple. Go to the webpage pibci.net. And if you're not computer literate, you can always ring me on 0439 395 489 and we'll send you out the necessary paperwork. Let's move on. The Washington Buffoon played like a mechanical rabbit at a greyhound track. I know most of you are against greyhound racing, but I assume some of you have been to a greyhound track and you see this little mechanical hare racing along and the dogs are chasing the mechanical hare. Well, the buffoon in Washington has been played by the Israeli state. They've got a vision to create this greater Israel, the biblical Israel in the Old Testament. I mean, you may have heard today they're going to try to occupy southern Lebanon for a while. They've occupied the Golan Heights. They've occupied Gaza. They've occupied East Jerusalem. They've occupied the West Bank. And they've got their little big brother, the Washington Buffoon, to come in and, you know, fight their battle for them. See, but the Washington Buffoon is in a little bit of a hole at the minute. American armaments and Israeli armaments are beginning to find a, how shall I put it, they're not being replaced. All those fancy defence systems are slowly, rapidly, I understand, running down. And all the Iranian authorities have to do is sit back, send a few missiles and a few drones across the Middle East and Israel, and see the Israelis and the United States waste a bit more of their munitions. And they'll see more and more of their weapons strike. So the Washington Buffoon is in a bit of a tight situation. So he starts making up things. Now, everybody thinks the Washington Buffoon has said there's going to be another 4 days before we bomb Iran's, you know, power plants. The fact is, what he's waiting for is for his little Marines to arrive so they can occupy part of Iran to open up the Gulf of Hormuz. Now, it's easier said than done. Easier said than done. And the Washington Buffoon is beginning to realise that he's, as I said, he's been played like a mechanical rabbit at a greyhound track. It's quite an extraordinary situation where the world's population, that's 8.3 billion people, are being held hostage, not by the Iranian government, but by 9 million Israelis whose government is peppered with war criminals. I found it amusing, although it's tragic, to hear a military spokesperson for the Israeli Armed Forces talk about the genocidal Iranian government, and I agree. But what about the genocidal Israeli government and what's happened in Gaza in the last 2 years? 85% of the buildings being destroyed, over 400 journalists being killed. This is in an area half the size of Melbourne. Medical facilities being totally obliterated, people being driven to starvation. And while this little war continues in Iran and the Middle East, the suffering in Gaza has not gone away. It's compounded as the Israeli government tries to remove from Gaza and the West Bank entities that have supported the people there for decades, like, you know, like World Vision, Doctors Without Borders, from these areas. And now they talk about seizing southern Lebanon. They've driven out 1 million people. They're destroying their homes. They've destroyed the bridges across the Levant River. They think it'll be some type of respite for the Israeli state. But the fact is, there are over 400,000 reservists from a population of 9 million have now been called out. Even their unlimited arms supplies are beginning to dwindle. We're seeing more successful strikes from Hezbollah and Iran. And what I found particularly amusing, although there's nothing amusing about what's happening in the Middle East, was the Iranian Revolutionary Guard releasing footage where they were mocking the Washington buffoon. As I said before, the Washington buffoon has an issue. Oil, although there is an increasing amount of electrification, especially in China, which is not affected by this wall because of the electrification program, because they've got 1.5 billion tonnes of fuel in reserve. The fact is that what we are seeing is the creation of another quagmire in the Middle East. You would think that after 70 years of failed intervention, the United States government would begin to realise that the way forward would be through negotiations and economic pressure, not military domination. People ask me, when do you think the war will end, Joe? Well, I think the war will end when there are so many body bags of US Marines arriving in the US of A. And I feel sorry for those Marines who are going to be sacrificed because of the buffoon's inability to understand he's been played by Israel to do the dirty work for them. That's, I think, when the American people begin to wake up. Not that they've woken up yet, but there is a price. You're paying the price. I'm paying the price. The price, our price is minuscule compared to the price of the people of Israel, the people of Iran, the people of Lebanon, the people of the West Bank, the people of East Jerusalem, and the people of Gaza are paying and continue to pay and will continue to pay. I mean, petrol's gone up a little bit. Food will go up, you know. Everything will go up and we'll clamour and carry on and ask the federal government to help us. But the reality is, this is a situation which has been created by the buffoon and his advisers who believed that using military force was the solution to ensuring that Iran does not build a nuclear weapon. Well, what can we say? We are mere spectators. But the fact is, it's interesting, Australia is no longer a spectator. Pine Gap, outside Alice Springs, is involved in relaying information both to Israel and the United States regarding their bombing campaign. We have over 3,000 US troops in North Australia. We have more US troops in the Northern Territory than we have Australian troops. I heard the Defence Minister, I think it was Mr. Bowen is his name, crap on about the fact, oh, we sent them to Townsville. They're still in North Australia. We have the development of an arms manufacturing industry in this country, because the thing about a lack of missiles is they need to be built somewhere, and they are being built in this country. And it's been this country's policies for the last few years, or the last decade, to make Australia an arms manufacturing centre for the world. So instead of improving our relationship with our near neighbours, we think the United States of America will protect us. Let's see what happens with Taiwan in the next 12 months. Because the scene is now set for a situation where we will not be asked to send one plane and 80 troops to Qatar to try to defend them against missile attacks from Iran, but we will find ourselves in a situation where we'll be asked to sacrifice an increasing number of Australians to ensure that the buffoon in Washington and the megalomaniacs that support him continue to do what they're doing. Extraordinary. You know, you just listen to the buffoon. Cuba, well, we're going to take over Cuba. We've stopped all oil to Cuba. Venezuela, well, we now run Venezuela. We got all their oil. Greenland, yeah, I want Greenland. I want Greenland. Stuff the Danes. Interesting that the Social Democrats have now the largest party now in Denmark. Elections were just held. And more interestingly, we saw the King and Queen of Denmark wander around Australia on a goodwill mission. Obviously, the goodwill mission is about, you know, Greenland, ultimately, us coming to their aid. And the list goes on and on. So, today, I offer you the old Chinese curse. I wish you live in interesting times. And this little curse came about during the Civil War, I've forgotten what century, in China, where 75% of China's population died in the Sino-Japanese Civil War. I'm talking about tens of millions of people. And that's the reality we face. I know it sounds, you know, illogical. I know it sounds as if it would never happen. But when you attach yourself to the coattails of an administration that believes it can do whatever it likes because it's powerful, whether it's trade tariffs, whether it's embargoes, whether it's kidnapping leaders, whether it's, you know, economically crippling countries, the list goes on, and finally using military force, then there is a price to be paid. Are you willing to sacrifice your grandchildren and children on the altar of Mammon? Are you? Because that's the situation we face as a country in the very near future. I know it sounds pathetic. It sounds, you know, like the end of the world is nigh. But the fact is, we have now reached a situation in Australian history regarding the company we keep as a nation, which puts us in the firing line, and we now are in a situation where missiles, that's right, little missiles from China or Russia can arrive here, especially in the north of Australia, at any time they please. And if you host the enemy's bases, as we've seen in the Middle East, whether it's Saudi Arabia, whether it's Qatar, whether it's United Arab Emirates, whether it's Bahrain, whether it's Oman, then you become a target. And that's the reality. And can 27 million people living on a continent defend that continent? No. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. All right, let's move on. I did mention before 1 in 4 Australians on minimum wage, which is about $50,000 a year. Now, I found that extraordinary. Look, I didn't realise that. I should have known it, but I didn't realise that 1 in 4 Australians who are working are on the minimum wage. That's $1,000 a week. $1,000 a week. When you take out taxes, food, mortgage or rent, it's not enough, is it? Even if you live by yourself and you've got a cat, you feed the leftovers too, it's not enough. No wonder people are angry. And why do we find ourselves in this situation? Because over the last 30 years, we have allowed ourselves to believe the propaganda, and it is propaganda, that unions are bad. They're all inhabited by crooks. And we now have the ridiculous situation where only 12% of the Australian working population is in a union. And most of them are in state-based industries or federal-based state-based public servants, as we've just seen with the teachers' strike in Victoria, where over 30,000 teachers and their support staff marched in the CBD yesterday because of a wage dispute. The fact is, we find ourselves in this miserable situation because we've believed the propaganda. I said before, private is good, public is bad, unions are bad, the private sector is good, individual contracts are good, union-based, you know, wage deliberations, bad. And we've seen government after government after government pass legislation which makes it almost impossible to people to organise on the job site, on the work site. So no wonder one in four Australians are on the minimum wage. And no wonder you need two people in a household to be working full time to actually pay your bills. And no wonder in the current situation with the escalation of fuel prices because of the, you know, Washington buffoon's little foray into the Middle East, military foray into the Middle East, courtesy of the Israeli, you know, war criminals. The fact is that we find ourselves in this situation. And once again, the majority of us look for scapegoats. The person who wears a funny hat. The person who's got a different skin colour. And the person who wears funny clothes. Our kids can't get into the housing market. We blame the migrant. Not the fact that we have negative gearing, capital gains taxes, which aren't really capital gains taxes. And the list goes on and on. Now, obviously, most Australians, we pay our taxes. They come out of your wage, week in, week out. You pay your taxes, you pay your fair share, and you expect something in return. You expect if you've got responsibilities, you've got children, you expect you can send them to a public school, let alone a private school. You expect that you could access healthcare in a timely manner. You expect you can pay your gas and electricity bills. You expect that you can maybe go out once a week and splurge on a takeaway. You expect all these things, but the fact is, if we don't work collectively together, it's not going to happen. And that's what deregulation, privatisation, corporatisation and globalisation is about. Now, just in case you've forgotten what these fancy words mean, it's very simple. Privatisation is when the government of the day, whether it's a state or federal level or the local government, virtually gives away public-owned entities which have been built up through taxpayers' money to the private sector because it's more efficient, in inverted commas. Deregulation is when you remove rules that stand in the way of business, which are there to protect the customer and the employee and also the employer. Green tape, red tape, grey tape, pink tape, you name it. Deregulation. Corporatisation, all you've got to do is you walk into any supermarket complex around the country, and there are many of them. Same brands, and if the brands are different, in the majority of cases, those different brands belong to one particular brand, which you know nothing about. That's corporatisation. So corporatisation is what destroys small business. Small business people say to me, it's the wage bill. It's all the government regulation that means I can't make a profit. You can't make a profit because there are no protections in this country for small business against corporate greed and corporate domination of the market. Different in many European countries where small businesses are protected and people make a living. For centuries, the same business passes from hands to hands. But not in this country. We've allowed the corporate sector to take over. And globalisation, simple. It means when we have large corporations decide, well, the best way I can make a buck is to give my business to that particular country where there are no trade unions and they pay them $2 an hour. Why should I pay people, you know, a minimum wage in Australia when I can actually get the same work done somewhere else, you know, for a tenth of that price? That's globalisation. These are the simple concepts. So, as I said at the beginning, our responsibility. For far too long, we have failed miserably to alert people to the fact that ultimately the way we live, the way our children are going to live, is dependent on how the wealth in this country is not just created but distributed. And while we allow the current situation to occur, nothing will change, and we'll see the rise of parties like Divided Nation, who are quite happy to point the finger at the other, but are no way willing to look at the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Let's move on. Section 3 of the Australian Constitution. I'm sure you keep the Australian Constitution under your pillow and you read one section every night before you go to bed. Fascinating reading. People say, why do you bother, Joe? Well, it's very simple. The Australian Constitution basically determines the types of laws that can be passed by the government of the day. Now, Section 3 of the Australian Constitution is an important section because it delineates the difference between the executive, which is the public servant, the government, which are the elected representative, and the courts, the judges, the magistrates, the judges. It makes a clear division. Now, there's been a few High Court cases which have rocked Australian society and which have been picked up by the reactionary conservative Murdoch media and blown out of all proportion. We had a situation where there are, I think, about 240 refugees who'd gone to jail for crimes they committed in this country. They were released from jail. And in the majority of cases, what happens when you're released from jail? You're on a good behaviour bond, whatever. You know, you've done your time, you do your crime, you do your time, and then you get on with your life, unless you do the crime again. So the government, not through legislation, which gave the courts the power to make that thing, the government decided to punish these people by, you know, a variety of ways, right? Now, every time they've gone to the High Court has said there is a division between the executive, which is the public service, the government, which are the elected representatives, and judiciary. This is what's called the separation of power, which poor old Joe Bjelke-Petersen knew nothing about, and I'm sure the Washington buffoon knows nothing about. Not that he's interested in the Australian Constitution. So it's the judiciary, not the executive or government, that can constrain individual liberty. So unless there are laws which are in place and somebody goes through a system, a court system, and punishment is handed out by the judge or the magistrate, the executive or the governor of the day does not have the power to hand out that punishment. I know it sounds academic, but it's critical. And that's why referendums play such an important part in the Australian Constitution. Because the Australian Constitution was constructed in such a way as to fossilise what's in it. Because the only way you can change the Constitution is not through Parliament, which you can do in Victoria, because the Constitution can be changed by, but through a referendum. And if a referendum is only successful if a majority of states and a majority of people in the country support that change, as we saw with the failure of the recent referendum regarding representation in the Constitution for First Nations people. So it's good to see that, unlike in the United States of America, the judiciary here still has some independence in terms of the way they look at the Constitution and are willing to hand down judgments which, you know, cause a little bit of discomfort to the government of the day and to the conservative reactionary media in this country. Disinformation, propaganda on steroids. I could tell you that the world sits on the shoulders of a turtle, which sits on the shoulders of an ant, which sits on the shoulders of a gnat, and I could press my button and bang, all over the world, we disinformation. Now, people say to me, well, Joe, that's ridiculous. The world doesn't sit on a turtle. I've seen a picture of the world from the moon. But the fact is that currently we are battling a disinformation overload. Now, disinformation and propaganda has been part and parcel of every society since time immemorial. The difference is, in the past, it took effort and energy, money and people power for that disinformation to become national. Today, you press a button and what you see is that disinformation is instantaneously received all around the world. So what we are now seeing is actors, mainly from authoritarian communities, using disinformation as a political ploy to destabilise social cohesion in a country and to destabilise communities which are based on a parliamentary system. So it's important that when you look at something, that you use your brain to think, does it make sense? Does it have a hint of truth about it? Is it too far-fetched to be real? And the problem is, with this never-ending morass of disinformation on asocial media, it doesn't take long for sections of the population to think about it as reality. So when we talk about fake news, it's a real problem. It's a huge problem. It's very easy to create fake news, propaganda, for a variety of reasons, whether it's for criminal activity or to destroy social cohesion in a society. And it's very important that we begin to understand what's happening in this country and around the world. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. This program has been coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program will be podcasted within the next 24 to 48 hours. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au, 3cr.org.au. Fewer websites, public interest before corporate interest. You can join today. Go to pipsy.net and join the day. Put the future of the many, that's the public, before the future of the few. That's the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Join us today. You can even send me letters. Yes, I do answer letters to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489. You can go to the YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, where I do a presentation every week. You can go to the historical YouTube channel, josephtoscano.com. The list goes on and on. But the important thing to remember is change is possible. Hope is the love child of desire, the desire for change and expectation, the expectation that change will occur, irrespective of disinformation, Washington buffoons, and the list goes on and on. Change will occur until every last human being on the planet disappears. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, courtesy of the Community Radio Network on your local community radio station. Listen in to The Anarchist World This Week, next week on your local community radio station. If there's any issue you want me to cover, 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.